welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. So I do have a bit of video I was going to show the folks.
What, is this the pizza guy?
Yes. They delivered a pizza?
I have the pizza guy. You have an issue with this?
No, it's just that Frank and I know Del Kabuki and that...
What is that?
Del Kabuki, and he has a pizza place that is near the Kodak Theater. And I just thought it was cheap. That's all. I thought it was very cheap of Ellen DeGeneres to use her celebrity and her massive influence at the Academy Awards to stoke the business, if you will, or prop, as you say, the business of one individual over another.
Well, why would she want to... You know, who's this Del Kabuki? Is that his name?
I'm sorry.
Because you told me it was something else.
Yeah, Kabuki, and I was thinking of Kabuki Theater. I was reading up on Kabuki Theater because I've got an interest in that.
What about Kabuki Theater?
I'll talk about that in a moment, bud. Kanukian or Kanagian. It's one of the Armenian names.
And he's a family friend.
Yes, he is, Phil. You don't have to make an issue over the fact that we don't know his last name. We've made a joke about Del and Grace's last name for years. No one can get their last name because it's so utterly unnecessarily...
Well, it is their last name, Margaret. And we do have a great many Armenians in California.
Yeah, a lot of Armenian, like, what's his name? Kardashian, you know.
What's his name, Kardashian?
Well, how about George Duke Majan? So anyway, forget about the last name. What's the story?
Well, what's the story? She uses her celebrity to prop this guy with the pizza parlor, and Del Kabukian, or whatever his name is. I'm sorry. Can you look it up, bud?
Yeah, I'm looking up Kalukian. I'll find it.
Thank you. They were given short shrift, and I find it very offensive.
Does she know them?
Does she know who?
Does she know this Del and this Grace?
No, she does not. That's not the point. Not the point.
All right. Let me go ahead and bring this up then. This is the gentleman who was speaking to, I guess he was talking to the E Media. He was talking to a reporter from E. And as a matter of fact, you know what I don't have is, I guess we can't hear this audio, can we? I should have brought this up on a different computer, but we were playing this for the audience earlier, and they were, this chap was talking about the fact that apparently Ellen uses his pizza parlor quite often, and in so using his pizza parlor, they were, you know, they've done a lot of business with her. And this business over the course of time has gotten them to, you know, kind of get her weird, strange ways. And here is the guy here talking.
From the bowls of cereal you make.
No, that's not the guy talking right there.
Delicious recipes you make.
That's the guy talking, huh?
No, that's a commercial for the bowls of cereal.
Almond Breeze.
Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn this off. And there, okay. So people can at least see the guy.
Ellen DeGeneres, you know, she is our regular customer.
This is the guy here.
And we've been getting orders from her at the Burbank studio. And then apparently, you know, that was quite a surprise to us, as a matter of fact, you know. And my daughter called me last night, and she said,
"Is this going to go on and on and on?
Are you watching TV?
Do you mind if we listen?"
I said, "No, I was working
Margaret,
I'd like
to hear that,
you know."
It's going and
she
to
said,
go on
well,
and
turn
on
the television
and
on, you know, because, you know, you guys are delivering pizza to the Oscar.
Big
I said,
deal.
"What?" He said, "Yeah, delivering to the Oscar, you
big
know."
Big deal.
I said, "What are you talking about, you know?"
Big
and
deal.
I turned the television on, and
Margaret,
I see, you know,
come
one
on.
Of our guys, one of our franchises, you know, that located, you know, in Hollywood area on Sunset Boulevard, which is almost walking distance from where the event was happening. And I see the guy, Edgar. I know him very well.
Yeah,
I know
let the
him,
guy have
you know.
A chance to do the,
and I see,
his pizza.
I can't believe that, you know. This guy is delivering pizza on the stage of the Oscar, you know. And it was quite exciting. It was quite amazing, you know.
Del Keldakian is his name.
Even talking, you know, I said, what's
I'm watching
going on here, you know. We are not even aware of that. It was quite a surprise, you know.
Blah, blah,
it
blah,
was a
blah.
Very pleasant surprise.
Well, if you don't like it, Margaret, why don't you get up and go and have yourself.
They ordered,
take a dump,
as what I saw, I saw three boxes of pizzas, you know. And apparently
hold
one
on.
Of them wedgie. The
Margaret,
other one
I don't think it's polite of you to be interrupting.
I'm not trying to interrupt. I didn't know you were going to let this man give a speech.
This is the audio from the interview that was done by the E! Channel, right, Robert?
Yeah, this is ETV. They interviewed this man. Oscar Pizza Party owner had no idea about special order.
I know what he's saying. He's pretending like he's surprised. Del Keldakian and his wife, Grace, have been dear friends of ours for years.
Yeah, so good friend, you'd think their last name is Kadakian or something.
I said, is this guy going to be allowed to give me a hard time because I...
Hey, wait a minute. You were messing his name up.
Who, Buds?
No, this friend of yours.
You couldn't get the guy's name right, Margaret.
I was having a difficult time because the guy's an Armenian.
Margaret.
The guy's an Armenian. All right. Now, if you'll pardon me, I'm going to go into the bathroom and dump.
God, what a child.
That is so childish, Margaret.
Why?
No, it just, what a child.
Why do you call that her a child?
That's what a child does. When a child can't get their way, they disrupt, they emote in inappropriate ways.
Don't talk about me like I'm not there.
Yes, we will, Margaret. And then closes the whole thing out with an entirely inappropriate and offensive remark like that. So...
Talking, you know, that's something, saying things like that on the air. And I recognize, Phil, that when the 15th comes, there will be no protection for people such as myself who have had a traditional relationship with media. I'll have no protection at all. In other words, I will be inundated with this.
Well, it's not like it's going to be some horrible assault.
Well, that's easy for you to say. When you say it's not a horrible... I'm going to sit here and listen to her talk about having to take a...
You don't have to... Listen, if Margaret is going to insist on behaving that way, it reflects on her.
All right, I can't even have a decent bowel movement. What are you talking about?
Margaret, why don't you...
Yeah, go finish what you're doing.
Because I'm listening to you, swine... Talking about, yes, that's right, I said swine, Phil.
Well, that's what you think about us. You know, all I wanted to do was listen to what this guy had to say.
Yes.
Well, what, are you crying?
Well, I feel as if I'm being ganged up.
Margaret, no one's trying to gang up on you. We wanted to hear what the man said.
And what about Del Keldakian?
Del and his wife, Grace, I'm sure, are fine people. They got a pizza parlor. We can plug the hell out of it. You know.
Well, it's not the same...
I know it's not the same thing as Ellen DeGeneres. What do you want from me? You know?
Why are you playing?
Margaret, don't start bawling because your friends didn't get equal time on the Oscars last night. She eats her pizza out of this guy, this Big Mama's pizza.
Oh, great. Say his name again. Why don't you go and say something like this? Gee, I'm really sorry, Margaret, that this man at BigMamasPizza.com, order online and save, restaurant food in a box.
All right.
That's what you're doing.
Well, I'm going to be talking about things that are newsworthy. This chap is newsworthy, if only for the reason that I didn't even see it happen, because I have to be perfectly honest with you, and this is embarrassing, I didn't even know the Oscars were on last night.
What?
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
You didn't know they were on?
No.
Yeah, but I had to remember. Finally, somebody said to me, you watch the Oscars. I said, no, I'm not. But I had to turn them on.
I totally spaced. I didn't know the Oscars were on last night. Man, the Oscars used to be on like the end of... I've lost track of them. And so I'm on Twitter, and I was tweeting something, and I saw everybody else. It was as if I was the only guy standing in line to see Lifeguard that time, and everybody else was seeing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know?
Yeah, whatever.
That story you told?
Yeah, it was an old story. So last night I'm, what? And so I you know, flipped on the Oscars kind of late. And I'd seen all these pizza tweets, which I had no idea, but I guess that's what she did. She delivered pizza. But this chap's name is Wayne Grigorian.
See, he's Armenian, isn't he?
Yes, he is. You know.
What are you giving me the bug-eyed look for, Phil? He's an Armenian.
I know he's an Armenian, but the fact is, so is your friend Del Kelbukian or whatever.
The name is Del Kadukian, and yes, he is Armenian with his wife, Grace.
He's Armenian with his wife. What about when he's not with her?
Wow, that's... God, that... Boy, that...
Okay. Nice one, bud. You really laid an egg there. We'll be back here on the Phil Henry Show with more of this drivel.
You can say that again.
More of this drivel.
You can say that again.
More of this drivel.
Gonna keep doing it.
I guess you don't like this guy, Wayne Grigorian, but you do like Dale and Grace Kelbukian?
Kelbukian. It doesn't matter. It could be Kelbukian.
In any event, in what could be the opening scene to a science fiction movie, French scientists have thawed and reactivated, dun, 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 a 30,000-year-old virus from the Siberian permafrost.
Get it out!
Bud's all afraid that it's some kind of a ghoul. You think it's a ghoul virus, huh?
I don't know what it is. It's scary, though.
Yeah, it's scary. We're going to find out whether it's scary or not. And we'll talk more about Del Keldukian and Wayne Gregorian and the rest of the very, very Italian pizza parlor owners here in the Southern California area when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is, well, it doesn't matter what our number is because we're changing our number in a few days.
We are?
I think so. Either that or we're gonna get rid of it. Hey, what happened to the music around here, man? We got no more music? Okay. It's world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. And don't forget, we are online and mobile at philhendryshow.com. We're online and mobile at TuneIn. That's TuneIn. So you can check us out there as well. And whatever you do, don't forget to stop by our online store. The Rudy Canosa Je T'aime Lingerie t-shirt is in the pink ladies' tee. And all of our downloads and all of our collectibles and just all of our The Phil Hendry Show. All right, it's the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Why are you doing all of those?
We have, as I mentioned, a TriCam. We got a new TriCaster. That's a video computer. I apologize, folks. I take pride in running a much tighter show. But we do have a new video computer, and so things are not where they used to be. And it's kind of like driving a new car, you know, where you're used to things. So I got to adjust the seat. This is a different setup. So that's why you see me looking confused.
Well, you don't. You reached over, and then you reached toward Margaret.
I'm sorry, Phil, but I'm not making a big deal. I know it was a mistake. But when you reached over toward where the general was sitting, and then when you reached in my direction, your hand went down.
Yeah, it looked like, you know.
Well, I'll do it, Bud. Your hand looked as if you were reaching for between my knees. Now, I know you weren't really.
Yes, that's right. I wasn't.
Oh, my God. Well, you don't have to emphasize it like it's a disgusting thought.
Well, Margaret, which is it? You want to do it or not?
Of course I don't want him to do it. I'm saying I was stunned for a moment. I got frightened.
You got frightened of what? You thought I was reaching between your legs?
Oh, well, look at you. Yes. Women have got to be careful, and I know there's a lot of women out there that know what I'm talking about. Would you be quiet, Bud?
Yeah, you're making a big deal.
Would you be quiet, Bud?
Come on, Bud, let her finish. Give her enough rope, she'll hang herself.
And don't talk about me, General, like I'm not here.
I'm not. I'm talking about you like you are here.
Give her enough rope and she'll hang herself.
What is your point, Margaret?
My point is, very, very clearly, there are women that know what I'm talking. From now on, I'm just going to assume that women know what I'm saying, so I won't get paranoid about the way you guys are looking at me. Phil Hendry reached between my knees. I know he didn't mean to. Didn't think a computer was there, did you?
No, Margaret. First of all, I didn't reach between your knees. I reached and you were in the way. You usually sit there and you had moved over here.
I was looking at something.
Great. So when I went to reach, I didn't know you were there. My hand didn't go between your knees. It brushed one of your knees as I reached over to get that keyboard there.
So I'm a liar?
No, you're not a liar.
Margaret, no one's calling you a liar, for God's sake. Every move a man makes isn't so he can get a cheap feel on your...
Well, just be careful.
Of course. Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Just don't get it.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of women are more and more concerned these days, Phil, about that kind of so-called inordinate move. I know you didn't mean it, but some guy that sits in that chair tomorrow night, some creep, because you may be sick, and you have some slob come in here, and he pulls a slob move, what do you think? Don't look at them. They can't help you now.
Don't look at them. I think that he would be, he would not be a good guy to have filling in.
Exactly.
No, but Bob, you gotta let go of it, man, until Mr. Hendry does what he says what he wants.
What?
Till Mr. Hendry say what you want him to.
Till Mr. Hendry say what I want him to, yes.
All right. No, that's not the case, Robert. However, I'm more than happy to give in on that point just so we can move this bloody show forward.
What language?
Well, that's it, and that's how I'm feeling right now. You know, I was in a pretty good mood when we started the show here, albeit with, you know, all kinds of distractions here mechanically. So I really don't want to get further distracted with you telling me that I was reaching between your knees when I was actually going...
Look at him laugh. It's just,
Well, the idea, Margaret, is pretty absurd, and I think you ought to let go of it, for God's sake.
General...
Let go of it, for God's sake. If we were in the middle of a battle, if we were in combat right now...
Well, you're not in combat.
Well, if we were in combat right now, and you were some lover taken off over a hill with all the medical supplies, I'd put one in your back.
God, you're a way to do it, Jerry!
Thank you.
What a...
All right, okay. The point is made. I think the general got the last word on that.
Yeah, sure.
In what could be the opening scene to a science fiction movie, you'd put
one in my back.
That's right. Some lover taken off over the hill with all the medical supplies.
I'd put one in your back. And what does that mean?
It doesn't mean...
Yeah, it doesn't mean back door.
But you dirt...
Hey, take your hands off of him. God...
Oh, I hurt.
I barely touched him.
Come on, bud.
In what could be the opening scene to...
What's so funny?
I put one in her back.
Oh, so you do get the double entendre.
No, I just... General, I don't know where you got the... She's some lover.
I think he's quoting Dirty Dozen.
I am quoting Dirty Dozen when Charles Bronson said the reason why Charles Bronson was in prison was because some lover took off with the medical supplies.
All right.
Excuse me.
It's okay. In what could be the opening scene to a science fiction movie, French scientists have thawed and reactivated a 30,000-year-old virus from the Siberian permafrost. Man, that is something right out of a sci-fi.
Don, you see a science fiction movie, man. They're bringing up some creature.
Yeah, they'll get a creature from below the frost.
Well, luckily, this pitovirus only attacks amoebas, but researchers warn that as exploration and development of the polar region increases, it is possible that we may come across potentially harmful pathogens and viruses that have been frozen for millennia. In a report published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, this team, led by Chantal Aubergel of Aix-Marseille University and Jean-Claude Claverie, used amoebas to draw out the virus from the permafrost and then filmed its entire life cycle, as shown in the video. And we did show the video before the show. If you missed it, too bad for you. I'm kidding. We can show it again.
Yeah, show the virus. Show the permafrost virus.
Right.
Are you going to show it?
I'm going to show it, Margaret.
Well, I think that a lot of people would like to know. I'm a mother, and a lot of women are very, very frightened of these vaccines. Now, if you're going to show some kind of some super virus or permafrost virus, whereby we may want to get our children inoculated, I don't know.
Margaret, there's no vaccination for the permafrost virus.
They don't even need to have a vaccination yet for any permafrost virus because they don't know that it is harmful. In fact, they know it's not harmful. It's a virus that amoebas get, okay?
What?
It's a virus that an amoeba gets. It's not a virus that human beings get. The pitovirus measures 1.5 micrometers long and 0.5 micrometers wide, making it the largest known virus in the world. Wow. 30% bigger than the previous record holder, the pando virus.
That one that strikes a panda?
No, yeah, or a pando.
Yes, I would say. Well, there's no pando, is there, Phil? What are the bears and that eat bamboo? Pando?
Pandas. No, it's nothing to do with pandas. A pando virus is some kind of a virus. I don't know which kind. But it's interesting. It's 30% bigger. Everything was bigger back then. Dinosaurs, you know.
Yeah, birds is bigger, and amoeba too. Even a panda virus.
Not a panda virus, man. Pando virus.
It's actually, I mispronounced, it's a Pandora. P-A-N-D-O-R-A. Pandora virus. Pandora virus.
Well, that is a computer virus, I thought.
No, that was another kind of virus. There's been all kinds of computer virus. It's not a computer virus.
I know it, but it can't be a computer virus.
There's no computer viruses in the permafrost. Wow. Wow.
I know that, General. I know. Do you really think there was a panda virus in the permafrost that affects computers? Hoo-hoo! get you.
Well, you're the one that started going down that lonely dirt road.
And I'll thank you not to use the term dirt road.
What is up with you tonight, Margaret?
Yeah, I want to know that, too.
Why are you looking at me?
From the very beginning of this show, man, you've been all over this Wayne Gregorian pizza guy, your friends Del and Grace Kabukian.
Keldukian.
Keldukian. Now you think there's a panda virus that is in the permafrost, but hey, it could affect the, whatever the hell you want to call it, the computers. And should we get a vaccination for our kids? And,
yeah, go ahead. Keep making things up.
Stop making it up, Ms. Gray. He said everything's a truth.
We're going to be right back on the Phil Henry Show, maybe. That is the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com.
I want to say, first of all, I'm sorry if I did come on too strong at the beginning of the program.
Sorry, Margaret.
And I think Nikki watching Scarface is absolutely wonderful. I like it when women involve themselves in cinema, even if it is one of the more violent gangster films of the genre. That she's watching it now while she should be paying attention to your show, I'll let that go.
Wait. That's not for you to judge. She's keeping tracks of the movie. She's keeping track of the movie, you know.
Yes, we know what's going on in it.
Now, I want to. I don't want to watch it because I'm not interested in looking at some Mariel Boatlift scum making good in America. Although he does get machine gunned in the film, I at the same time am interested in what Nikki's read on this film is, and so forth. You know.
That's very interesting. I think what you're saying is you're just scared of the violence.
Yeah, that's right. I'm deathly afraid of the Hollywood violence. I'm a war veteran. I've seen it all. I've done it all. I've been there and back.
You've done it all?
Yes, and I wouldn't bring it. Some of the things I've done and seen, some of the places I've been, I wouldn't bring up in mixed company.
Well, that means because Bud's here.
Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, it's real funny, Miss Gray. Probably the stuff that the general has to say will make you throw up. And you go, you know, everything.
Oh, quit trying to be funny, Bud. You're really laying an egg. Phil told you already.
All right, let's everybody stop trying to do the comedy routines here tonight, okay? Are you serious, Margaret, that the general is afraid of the violence of the movie?
No, I'm giving him a hard time, but I'm simply saying that it is refreshing for a woman such as Nikki to be watching a film like that. I think more of us should, as females, look at those kinds of movies. What's he doing?
I'm falling asleep. Listen to this thing.
Screw all of you.
Margaret, you know what? You're one of the best when it comes to acting like you're bored.
Catherine Bigelow, that, let me just say that.
She's a great director. She's a great director. Catherine Bigelow has made arguably the greatest war movie ever made in Hurt Locker. Now, I know there's a lot of people. You know, we all have our different points of view. But it seems to me there's two kinds of war movies. There's the war movie that's about the actual war, the guns and the bombs and the tanks and the operation and the battle and the moment of the engagement between these armies. And then there's the war film that's about the soldiers that are involved in it. And Hurt Locker is one of the best that I've ever seen in my life.
What about Saving Private Ryan? What about that?
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's a brilliant movie. No question about it. But maybe it's because Hurt Locker is about a more contemporary times. It's a uniquely American film. The other movie that is the most violent and frightening that I think I've ever seen, but also probably right up there with Hurt Locker, is the movie I told everybody about, Lebanon, which was made in Israel a few years ago, and it's a stark, frightening movie.
Now, you said this takes place in a tank.
The entire movie takes place from the perspective of the soldiers inside of a tank as they're moving into southern Lebanon during Israel's incursion into Lebanon following the Hezbollah rocket attacks. I'm trying to remember which period of time. It was the 80s. But the film is what do they call it? Sometimes they'll say a film is a shattering experience. It's a pretty shattering experience.
But any getting back to Nikki's, and another movie you should watch, Nikki, is... Never mind.
Well, what's...
You're talking about war films in Lebanon.
Yeah, it does kind of put all that other stuff into perspective. All right. So getting back here to this frost virus, Dr. Ron Tarner joins us from the Mountain Meadow Observatory in the great state of Colorado. And Dr. Tarner is going to tell us a little bit about what this virus is and perhaps what we can expect from scientists in the days and the weeks to come in terms of their commentary or their research on that. Dr. Tarner, how are you?
Well, Phil, I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. What can you tell us about this virus?
Well, Phil, it is a Siberian, a giant virus from the Siberian permafrost. It is called a pithovirus. It only attacks amoebas, as you mentioned. The big fear is that as we explore more this region of the world, where there is so much organic life, quite possibly embedded in this ice, very deep ice, ice that has outlasted many cities, many centuries, many civilizations, ice that goes back almost to the very beginning of our planet. This is a place that could be an incubator for, albeit more of a deep freeze kind of an incubator for life that would be threatening to life on this planet. What could happen? I don't know. I'm not a prognosticator. But I concur 100% with the researchers that take that point of view.
Now, isn't it possible, Dr. Tarner, that many of those researchers are just plain jealous of the French doctors that made this discovery?
Well, that's a good point, Doctor. This is General Tarner, and I was thinking just that these French doctors have come upon something that's a lot of sour grapes, and a lot of these other doctors are poo-pooing it. You know, and they're saying, oh, we could be attacked by a giant creature or something.
Well, no one is saying being attacked by a giant creature. I haven't heard that, but I'm going to go you one better. Instead of a giant creature attacking us, how about a disease that could potentially put millions at risk? That's what we have to warn the governments of the world. That's what we have to warn the health professionals of the world about. What is the likelihood of it? I don't know. Is it 100%? Is it 50%? Is it 70%? I don't know. Based upon the films that I've seen, the science fiction films that I've seen, if I allow myself to get, if I allow my imagination to run away with me, there's a lot of things that we could find under the ice.
Such as?
Yeah, like what? Like in The Thing?
Well, the young man there, Bud, said the word The Thing was a film that came out in the 50s.
Well, you don't think The Thing is anything that approaches reality, do you?
Well, the film that came out in the 50s and in the early 80s with Kurt Russell, which was a far better remake, as long as you people were talking about films.
We don't like the use of the term "you people." I'm sorry, Doctor, to interrupt you.
All right.
What are you saying, Tarner? Are you saying that we've got a problem, a potential problem that has to do with alien life?
If you want to a science fiction scenario, if you want to begin to consider a science fiction scenario, why not consider an alien life form that has remained frozen under the permafrost for a number of years? Now, in the film The Thing, of the alien craft landed and was there for only a few days, I think, before they finally sent an expedition to the North Pole to uncover it. But you will remember War of the Worlds, at least the version as envisioned by Steven Spielberg. There was an alien life form sitting under the streets of Long Island for centuries.
How is it that we're talking about this? I just want to know. You know, I mean, it's all very, very interesting.
Well, these are things to consider.
Now, I know, but it's all very interesting. But I want to just know about this virus. And I'm not even talking about it in terms of being a threat to humanity. I just think it's fascinating as hell to find a living or an organic life form that 30,000 years old. That's got to be the oldest thing that we've ever found. I mean, not the oldest thing, but the oldest form of life.
To the extent that this virus was reanimated and was able to resume its life cycle, yes. We have not been able to do that with any other form of life other than microbe life. And when I say microbe life, I mean microbe, virus, bacteria, this, but not any kind of organic life that we know of, the higher lives, the higher forms of lives, the higher level of the live, or the live, of the life. four-legged creature. Or two-legged creature.
Well, what are the scientific terms for that? When you say it's not a microbe form of life, what is it?
Well, the scientific terms, those are big words that I try to avoid using. The actual word would be a big word that I would not want to use because it would be unpronounceable for you. But what I mean is any life that is bigger, any life that has four legs and walks around.
Well, what about if it swims?
What about if it what?
If it swims, if it's...
You're talking about undersea life.
Yeah, aquatic life. Marine life.
Yes, we're talking about marine life.
Marine life? Well, if it swims or walks, and it doesn't have to think, we haven't been able to reanimate from the permafrost any creature that walks or swims or has two eyes and a nose, you know?
And I guess the question is, what do you call that? So if you're saying...
I don't want to use the big words, I told you.
Let's just use the big words.
I don't know what they are right now. If it's all right with you, I'll go ahead and communicate on a level that I think is more comfortable. If that's all right with you.
Well, I mean, Dr. Tarter, we're simply trying to...
If that's all right with you, that's the only question.
We're simply trying to be as literate as we can.
It's all right, Dr. Tarter. I think I get it.
No, I don't think... If where you're going... is I don't know, I'm not educated.
Well, it seems like you're not educated to those words. Talking about, well, if it isn't a microbe or microbiotic life, are you talking about something that walks around and has a nose and eyes?
Yes, I think that's a way of describing life, higher life, that everyone will understand, including little children. And you would be surprised the number of schools and small classrooms and large classrooms and lower grades and higher grades of people, of kids in the elementary and grammar school levels that I have to speak to.
All right. I tell you what, Doc, hold the line. We'll get back to you and continue discussing with Dr. Ron Tarter the virus found in the Arctic ice. 30,000 years old, man. I mean, that is a... That's an old one, and I'd say that's an old virus. Be a hell of an old virus to get, huh?
Well, I mean, for God's sake, what the hell do you, you know, how do you knock that one out?
I'd say, yes. What kind of NyQuil takes care of that? Oh, give me a break, will you?
No, that was good. Only NyQuil's not for a virus. It's for, it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com.
Pain in the ass.
No, I'm not. Hey, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Dr. Ron Tarter on the line with us from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. And I suppose it's only fair to let people know that that's an observatory, obviously. And we're talking to you about a virus.
Well, this is the interesting part of this. If I could...
Hold on, Margaret, if you wouldn't mind.
Wave a piece of paper.
I'll answer the question before you answer it, Philip, if I might.
All right.
I've been dabbling in every kind of science for a long time, and this is just one area of science that I'm interested in. Astronomy is one, and this is where I make my living, but the study of protoviruses, antediluvian life, and so forth, primordial life, prehistoric life has always been fascinating to me, and I've attended a great many conferences on this. I'm only going to give you the scientific reaction to what has been happening, and that is that the science community is fascinated, and people such as myself bringing up the potential dangers are being laughed at. But I'm not. This is something that I'm used to, and something that I will continue to have to deal with.
Get a lot of people laugh at you, Doctor?
A great many people. When you are isolated because you don't find the scientific brain trust, scientific hierarchy, the pantheon of scientists, when you don't kowtow...
Well, this is what we get into a lot with you.
Basically, I just wanted to finish what I was saying, Margaret, that I'd be happy to entertain any questions you have. When you don't kowtow to the pantheon of scientists that I'm asked to kowtow to, I'll say the name so we can just get it out of the way, Dr. Stephen Hawking.
Well, there we go, you know.
Hold on. When you don't kowtow to the Stephen Hawkings and the rest of the pantheon of scientists, well, then you're laughed at and you're called names and you're considered to be you know, on the outside, an outcast, someone that's not trustworthy, someone who's not believed, and so on. I just say that there are bigger things at work here.
But when you started out on the show, it didn't sound to us like you thought that this virus posed any threat.
Well, I don't think it does. I just want an open and honest discussion of what else is down there.
And you think what's down there is on a level of the thing?
No, I don't. I'm a scientist. I'm not a movie critic. The thing is a movie. But if you want something that people can readily relate to, if I'm talking to a bunch of people that are lay people that don't understand me or what I'm trying to say, because I travel some 15,000 miles in a 6-month period every year to alert the public and educate the public and inform the public as to different scientific matters. And I'm always looking for that allegory or the metaphor or the comparison. How can I get through to my audience tonight? How can I get through to an auditorium filled with people who really just spent the previous 8 hours in a world that is so foreign to me, something that I left far behind me as a young man? I want no part of the farmlands and the drugstores and the gas stations that these people have buried themselves in, and now they come to an auditorium and they stare at me like I'm a guy coming into their gas station and asking for a free gallon of gas. Oh, I'm not. I'm the guy coming to them and saying, don't light that cigarette next to that pump. And yet there they are with a 3-pack-a-day habit. So this is...
Well, you're saying that the audiences you're trying to communicate with are not hearing you.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that they're not hearing you. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, that's good. That was very funny.
I think the general is right. What we're hearing here is that you are... It's a fruitless... It's a thankless job. It's not a fruitful job.
It's a fruitless... It's fruitless. It's thankless, fruitless. It's not fruitful. I think the word fruit. Get on. Anything having to do with a fruit. I'm telling you, that's how I feel tonight. And that's how I feel about hockey, too.
Well, this is getting a little personal.
All right. We're talking here with Dr. Ron Tarner on the protovirus, or not a protovirus, the permafrost virus that was discovered in the Arctic Circle. Scientists are saying there's no threat. It's a very interesting virus that attacks amoebas. It's a 30,000-year-old virus. It is older than, I think, the previous older virus, which was called the Pandora virus. What do you know about that?
I don't know much about the Pandora virus because there is a scientific blockade, embargo of information against some of us that, quite frankly, we don't understand. So I'm left to going into the hinterlands every year and talking to auditoriums filled with people who look hopeful, but in their baseball caps and their sort of people who will look at you in baseball caps, and there's a little bit of dirt around the collar, but they put on their best shirt. Their ears are big, maybe bigger than they should be for their heads. This is what you're looking at. It's not difficult, Phil, to imagine what may be laying under the frost of the North Pole when you look out into an audience full of people who have just come from the gas station, their best shirt, their best pants, but there's still grease under their nails, and ears that are way outsized for their heads.
I don't understand what this means. This is starting to bother. What are you talking about, ears outsized for their heads?
I'm saying...
But it sounds like a very elitist argument.
No, it's not elitist at all. I'm the one. Are you out there? I don't think you are. I'm the one.
Well, we'd be out there if we had the information and the knowledge that you have. We don't have that.
Yeah, do it. Make a speech and everything, but I don't know how.
Well, okay. Well, bud, thank you for your honesty.
I think I'm being honest, too.
Well, Margaret, you're not being as honest as Bud. Bud, in all of the glory of his ignoramus and completely jacked-up brain, is for all the world showing us, in all of his glory, what an imbecile he is. But you, you're going to hold back. You're going to hide behind the veneer of education when you and Bud have far, far more in common than I have with either one of thou.
Thou, okay.
It's a word that I've...
Well, you may be communicating better with your audience if you drop words like that. We're here with Dr. Ron Tarner. Our number is 855
500-7445, world famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. I'm told by Bud we can get a phone call in here. Let's go to Jeff, who's talking to us here tonight from Denver, Colorado, which is very, very near, very, very near where you are, Dr. Turner. Jeff, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Dr. Turner, this is Jeff. I wanted to ask the question because I was at your erection in Colorado Springs 2 weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to ask the question. You were talking about the future of mankind 100 years in the future if we've had the opportunity to get the tunneling that we want to get done and that we're able to transport that to as close an area here on Earth to the eventual colonization of the moon. And you remember that?
Well, there was a lot I was talking about, but yes.
Okay. Now, the vehicles that we're talking about taking to the moon and eventually honeycombing the undersurface with these.
All right, now hold on for a minute there, Jeff. And you, Dr. Turner, we're going to be back. We have a limited amount of time.
What is that man? Get that man more organized, Bud.
I tried to get him to.
Well, he sounds like he's stumbling and bumbling around.
Yeah, we'll get back to Jeff and with Dr. Turner here talking about this, you know, situation vis-a-vis the North Pole, or maybe not.
I think it's fascinating, but I think you need to have someone on who's got a foot in reality, someone who can speak to these matters, who doesn't sound like he needs to be on medication. This guy you got on the phone, ask this guy. Some of these people should be asked if they're... Forget it. You know, the electroshock.
Electroshock. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. With us is Dr. Ron Turner, and we're just going to continue for a couple of more minutes... talking with them about this frozen virus that they found in the frost up there in the Arctic Circle. We also had this gentleman on the phone. I think his name was John or Jeff or Cliff or...
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I asked the guy, I said, what name you want to use? He said, he don't care.
What do you mean he don't care?
He doesn't.
All right, let's get this gentleman back on the phone. And then, sir, is this the guy we were just talking to? Or is this somebody else?
My name is R.C. Collins, Mr. Henry.
What happened to the guy that we had on the line?
Well, he probably hung up, for God's sake.
All right, is Dr. Turner there?
No, this is Dr. Turner, yeah.
Okay, R.C., how you doing?
I'm doing good, Mr. Henry. I've called your program before and everything.
I know you have.
I wanted to ask Dr. Turner, since he's offering opinions on different areas that may not even be areas that he fully appreciates or understands, which I certainly can... I guess I can understand your interest in it.
Well, now, hold on for just a minute, young man.
Hold on, doctor. I've got the floor, doctor, if you don't mind.
Well, hold on. You're beginning to disparage me.
Well, let's let R.C. ask his question.
Well, he wants to disparage me, and I don't think it's fair.
I have the floor, doctor, and you said in your statements earlier that Dr. Stephen Hawking was a part of the pantheon of scientists that rejected outright you and your cabal of scientific researchers.
Nothing borderline about what I do, young man. If I can finish what I was saying, I'd be very happy to elucidate and to illuminate what it is you're trying to say.
You don't know what I'm trying to say is Dr. Stephen Hawking is 50 times the scientist that you'll ever be. You're talking about the thing underneath the ice. The thing, if there is something under the ice, would be there submerged for ages, would not just have landed and then come out of there in a matter of 24 to 48 hours. It would stay very well hidden from the authorities for a great many centuries.
And you're basing it on what?
Basing it on common sense.
All right, let's not talk about things that are hidden under the ice, if it's okay with you. Did you have a question for the doctor?
Well, yeah, sure. Where did you get your degree? You know, and...
Well, thank you very much. I think I've had about enough of this insult. I'm not going to sit here and allow this young man from the military academy to insult me, someone whose mind cannot possibly be much developed much beyond that of someone who suffered brain trauma, and to ask me to take a second the back seat to Dr. Stephen Hawking, who rolls around in a hovercraft.
It's not a hovercraft, sir. It's a hover-around.
Not a hover-around.
You don't even know the difference between a hovercraft and a hover-around. That's what I'm talking about, though.
All right, thank you very much, young man. He used some vulgarities there.
Did you hear what that young man called me? And did you hear the multitude of things he called me? I hope that was not allowed to go out over the air, because that was...
No, it was not, sir. It was not, I can assure you. We're talking here with Dr. Ron Tarner about the virus. You were just talking to this young man about the science fiction, The Thing, and are these the kind of people that you encounter in your lecture series?
Yes, very much so. And people want to know, are these things possible? And I'm the one doctor that will address these things head on, straight on with them. I have theories about what happened to Bobby Fuller. You just played a Bobby Fuller 4 song. I have theories about what happened to him. People think that he died a natural death with gasoline in his stomach. I agree with that. I don't think that there was any foul play.
Well, Doctor, this is hardly your area of expertise, but I'd love to hear your reasons for that.
My reasons are very simply this. Everyone would think that Bobby Fuller was attacked and killed by a third party, maybe the boyfriend of a young lady he'd been fooling around with, and would think that him having gasoline in his stomach would indicate a homicide of some kind. I think, quite frankly, a partier, a young man with the amount of money that Bobby Fuller had and the success that he was having, anything goes with a kid like that. It's one day you may be snorting cocaine or heroin or even the fumes of someone's gasoline tank. The next day you might be drinking it.
So you think he purposefully drank gasoline?
I'm saying that this has not been taken into consideration because we're so quick to jump on the bandwagon of a conspiracy. Ooh, someone killed him. Ooh, you know.
Don't sound asinine.
Let me tell you something, Tarner. I've been putting up with your drivel here for the last half hour.
No, I've been putting up with yours, General, listening to some of the things I hear you say from night to night.
Well, then I'd suggest you not listen to it, but for you to say that this kid Fuller, and I don't even know who you're talking about, but a guy purposefully drinking gasoline to get his laughs, the only guy I think that might even consider that is a guy like you.
Well, I think that's something I should have expected from this panel. I am very controversial. I'm strange. People know that. They say that about me. They've written that about me. But what I come up with, ideas and answers. I'm Ron Tarner. I get things answered. If you want an answer to a question, I have it.
No matter how screwy the answer, no matter how concocted, no matter how unfounded.
Yes, exactly. Because people want answers. You say to me, I want an answer, I'll give you an answer.
Even if it's the wrong answer?
It doesn't make any difference. People want answers. We are living in a world where there's no answers.
No, listen to me, Tarner. Are you saying...
Don't call me by my last name. Call me Ron.
No, I'll call you Dr. Tarner or Tarner.
Okay. I know you're married, and I respect that. I'm just asking if we can grow closer in the time that we have together here on the air. That's all.
I don't want to talk.
Okay, Dr. Tarner, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I was inappropriate, wasn't I?
Yes, you were, Tarner. You were very inappropriate. And I'm calling you Tarner. What do you think of that?
It doesn't matter coming from you. I don't want to get closer to you. I wanted to get closer to Ms. Gray in the time that we have on the air together. You know, thaw the relations I have with her and others that I admire. And I, whatever it takes. I am here to give answers. All right.
Yes, you said you're here to give answers, and you give stupid answers, and no, I don't want things to warm up between us.
I think that you may change your mind if you see some of the things I've been working on. If you see some of the evidence that I've uncovered, and I'd like to invite you, and yes, if you'd like, bring a friend to my home.
All right, well, we can talk about this off the air.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to her.
All right.
I'll talk to him during the break, of course, but not now.
Yeah, I'll put you on hold, Dr. Tarner. I'll put you on hold, Dr. Tarner. Dr. Tarner? Yeah, I got to put you on hold. She'll get to you in a minute here. Yeah.
What are you laughing at?
I don't know.
That guy is screwier than... He's goofier than... My father used to say he's nuttier than a March hare.
Boy, I'll tell you, there's a guy there that could use... You talk about time away, maybe time in a soft room...
Dr. Ron Tarner with theories on the frost and the ongoing, the virus in the Arctic frost and the ongoing problem he's got with what's his name?
Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking. The problem he's got with Hawking, man, that goes back for years, doesn't it, on this show?
Yeah, the first time we ever had Ron Tarner on. You talk about Stephen Hawking this and Stephen Hawking that.
Yeah, he can't even get straight the hovercraft that he's in.
It ain't no hovercraft, man.
I'm sorry, hover round.
Yeah, hover round, not hover round.
It's called a hovercraft or the hover round. And the hover round, my wife Patsy wanted to get one for me, and I said, are you serious? Is this some kind of a cheap, creepy, burlesque joke? And she said, General, you'll never know. I said, I feel fine, I'm looking good, and I've got my own two legs, and the day you see me in that glorified golf cart is the day that I self-mutilate. And I mean that.
Oh, God, General.
Well, I'm dying. How else do you get a woman to take you seriously?
Yeah, that's it. Well, I guess that's one way of doing it. All right. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Tarner. It's worth it getting the hell out of that that weird, strange, oddball story. Okay, Ellen DeGeneres' selfie. Did you see that one? Did you see what we did with it? Yeah, that's right. I put myself in it. Okay, ha-ha. It's on our homepage. I guess you guys want to talk about the Ukraine again, huh?
Yeah, it's very interesting the way everything's developing down there.
But I don't want to talk about the charge of the Light Brigade if it's all the same to you.
No, we're not going to talk about the charge of the Light Brigade, okay?
Think we are going to invade?
No, I don't think we're going to invade. What the hell? You know, this is another one of these things that goes on over there. This has happened before, you know.
Well, wait a minute, Henry. Are you talking about Hungary and all that?
Yeah.
Well, it's not quite the same.
Oh, it's the same. It's a geopolitical thing, isn't it? It's geopolitical.
What's that mean?
Geo as in geography, political as in political. See, the geographic political control, you know, sphere of influence. And Russia's gone into Hungary. Russia's gone into Czechoslovakia. Russia pretty much, and this is a precedent that we set after World War II, so I think we have to...
Oh, come on, Henry. It's a whole new ball game. A whole new ball game. There's a whole new bunch of bats and gloves and balls. And
there's a whole new set of balls, right?
What? Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, you guys can be crude, but the minute that I try to throw one in there...
No, that's great. A whole new set of balls and a whole new ballpark. All right, back in a moment to talk about that and other jazz. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Phil Henry Show. And we are online at philhenryshow.com. You can listen live, mobile, or desktop, free. We are online at TuneIn. You can listen mobile or desktop, free. Just go to our Phil Henry channel to tune in, or just go to philhenryshow.com and hit the listen live link. Every night, free, live, mobile streaming of our radio show. And that includes the behind the scenes during the commercial break. And, you know, we may even start airing the pre-show. I don't know if anybody thinks about that.
Well, some of the stuff on the pre-show.
Can you do that, Phil?
Why not? Why can't I do it?
What do you think about if you use a dirty word?
If I use a dirty word. Now, there's an interesting...
Well, what about it, Mr. Adults aren't going to mind. Bull out a little tiny kid.
I don't think kids should listen to the show. I don't think kids should listen to the show. That's my official stand on that. No kid under 18 should be listening to this show. Now, do I know that there are young people listening to the show? Yeah. And do I talk with, you know, I communicate with some on Twitter and on our website and on Facebook who I know are teenagers, but they're super smart people and they understand what we're doing. They get where we're going. They understand the grand plan that I have for this. Well, I shouldn't get into it.
Oh, don't talk stupid.
Well, you know, I have certain plans for this planet. Things that will necessitate the building of underground bunkers.
Henry, why don't you quit fooling around? And it's a very serious question.
All right. I mean, you know, my official stand is no. Kids under 18 shouldn't listen to the show. That's my official stand. Do I know that there are people under the age of 18 who are very intelligent, recognizing our show as a satirical presentation? Yeah, I know that. It's hard to say, you know, don't... What's when you were a kid, what was the big X-rated movie you snuck into? Or when you were a kid, what was... General, do you remember?
Well, now you're talking about a what? An X-rated movie.
Maybe, did they have X ratings when you were a kid?
Yeah, Phil, they had X-rated... In fact, they even had... automobiles when I was a kid. They develop those.
General, don't take it personally.
Well, what's the guy talking about anyway?
I'm talking about when you were a kid, were there movies that were prohibited to kids in the movie theaters?
Yes, of course.
All right, like for instance?
Well, hey, Mondo Cani, the sky above, the mud below.
What was that about?
Well, Mondo Cani was a vile... It was all messed up. It was a documentary on the different wild, weird things, and they had all kinds of bongo music and women, well, you can well imagine.
Well, was there nudity?
Oh, yes, there was nudity. There was from the top down, it was all nude all the time.
What do you mean from the top down? Were they topless?
Yes, they were top, and they had all kinds of dances.
Oh, Mondo Cani, if you may be permitted,
you asked me what movie.
I know, but people need to know this was a documentary that was made in the early 60s, right?
Yes. The Sky Above, the Mud Below. Mondo Cani. And it was just, it was sickness beyond, and they even had a section in there. There were a group of Stone Age people that worshipped an airplane.
What? You gotta be out of your mind or something.
You say that and smile, Dickman. Yes, they had people that worshipped it. Why do you think they worshipped the airplane?
What do you mean they worship an airplane?
On account of they don't have airplanes, man. So when they saw an airplane, they thought it was godlike.
That's right.
Yeah, there are people like that, bud. Just like those people they found down there in Brazil, man.
What do you mean, the ones that had the spears and everything?
Yeah. Remember those people?
Oh, those? That was fascinating. Now, the young lady that flew over that and took the photographs, I thought that it was pushing your luck a little bit. Wasn't she sort of bothering? Wasn't she pushing her luck?
What do you mean?
Well, she's flying over again and again, almost as if to say, ha, 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 I'm up here in this aircraft, and you're down there with your spear. It's almost like you're tempted to open your blouse.
Well,
No, Phil, not... It is a feeling of superiority. You understand that, don't you?
No, I've never been in that situation. I don't know what you mean.
If you saw people that were Stone Age people, and you're flying above them in an aircraft, and they can't possibly reach you with their spears and their ridiculous slingshots and their little purple painted bodies, wouldn't you be tempted to drop your pants?
Would I be tempted to drop my...
Phil, what is he laughing at?
Margaret, that's about the most jive-ass...
I think Miss Gray's making a good point.
What good point is she... Are you telling me that you would be?
I would be tempted to open my blouse and go, hoo. It's only normal.
Yeah, a lot of ways it is, Mr. N, because look at how much better we have it.
So your temptation would be to mock the people down there?
Phil, I'm with you, Phil. How dare you do that to people whose only subsistence is eating insects, and their idea of a Friday night, what do? They cover themselves in mud and go down by the creek and wash it off. I don't see it. I don't want any part of it.
You don't want any part of it. You don't want to be part of that culture. But wouldn't you be tempted?
If I was flying over it to do what?
To pull your pants down.
To pull your... You are, in other words, Margaret...
I don't think I'm asking you. I'm asking the general.
Well, of course I'd be tempted to lord it over them and put stick my rear end out the helicopter hatch, yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you're laughing about it, Mr. Henry.
To me, that's about as goofy a thing as I've ever heard in my life. So where were we? What were we talking about here? We're talking about what? We were talking about Stone Age people and, I forget. But anyway, welcome back to the show. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Well, yes, there was a point you were trying to make. I'm sorry.
I was bringing up the Stone Age people. I don't know what it was. But as long as you're on the subject of Brazil and hanging my ass out the window and mocking the people down there, no, I wouldn't want to do that at all. I wouldn't want to do that at all. I would. I always said the same thing that I'll say now what I said before. If the whole idea is to not mess with a culture like that, to let it stay as primitive as it is, as simple as it is, as untouched as it is, to sort of protect it the same way they did in Star Trek with their non-interference directive, it's virtually impossible because there's one thing...
Why do you say that?
Because the one variable that I don't think anybody thinks about is that while we can stay away, after the helicopter flew over those people and took those pictures, because they went not once, they went back a couple of times to get pictures of that tribe of people, there's somebody on the ground who sees it. And it might be a young person or some other member of the community who is the free thinker.
Yeah, there's probably a guy in the town, in the village of the mud people or whatever they're called.
Oh, I know. We were talking about Mondo Connie.
Yeah, I'm talking about Mondo Connie, and I'm worshiping an airplane.
Right, they were worshiping the airplane. Well, that's what we're talking about, a Stone Age people. Like, they talked to a guy who had been a member of a Stone Age tribe about the first time he saw a helicopter. He thought it was a giant insect. He didn't know what the hell it was. And then, of course, he recognized what it was, and it was explained to him. And
well, did he flip his lid? Did he go mad? Did he go insane with the reality of it?
No, he didn't. People are very adaptable. Human beings are very, very adaptable. Humans, once they're explained how something works, what it is, and what you use it for, and how it may benefit you. I keep using the example of Native Americans mastering the horse, the fire, the gunpowder, firearms. They defeated the white man at his own game more than once. So you can't really, humans are adaptable. But anyway, I always say the same thing. If somebody in that village saw that helicopter, the first thing they're going to think and probably say,
well, don't they have a council meeting inside the large Temple of Doom or whatever they've...
Well, I don't know if they've got a Temple of Doom, for God's sake.
Well, I'm sure they have a council or a meeting area. But someone's going to say, what was that thing we saw today? And probably one of the old-timers would say, forget it. Don't even worry about it. Those are outsiders, and they're really dangerous, and they're going to ruin our world. But there's bound to be, just like in our own culture, one or two young people are going to say, well, I want to know where that came from. I want to go find out where that came from. I want to know what that. I want an answer to what that is. So we can be as careful as we want.
Boy, Mr. Andrew, you got a way of putting things that really makes sense and everything like that.
Yeah, I got to say, Mr. Andrew, that's pretty true.
Well, I grudgingly will give you the award.
Well, I don't, as you know, Phil, not because I don't respect you, but because I can't. It's my job to continually tell you what really just a sack of you-know-what you are.
Yes, thank you.
That's how I keep you honest. I'm Margaret Gray.
10 seconds.
Don't say it. The bad girl is.
World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Welcome back to the program. And I looked up some of these pictures here. I got all these Stone Age tribe pictures here behind me.
Now, which is which here? There's all kinds of orange people.
No, not all of these pictures. If you enter in Stone Age Tribe Brazil, you get all kinds of pictures of primitive people who look like they're having free and what looks to be happy relations with the photographers and the people. I'm not talking about those folks. I'm talking about the most recent tribe that was discovered, and there are aerial shots of them, and you can see very clearly that they're not happy seeing this helicopter. They have they're painted orange, the warriors, who have bows and arrows pointed right at the helicopter or aircraft that's taking the picture. Then standing behind them is a guy painted in black, almost as if he's the commander, and these two men, obviously with the bows and arrows, are the warriors or the foot soldiers, and they're being commanded by this guy. But the body paint seems to indicate, maybe, I don't know, I don't want to play anthropologist here.
Well, it sounds like it makes sense, Mr. Henry.
Well, I mean, they seem to indicate some rank in that society. The first time they flew over this settlement, they saw women and children. This was according to the people I actually talked with, some people that studied the photographs at the Institute in Brazil and in South Florida. And then there were... some other folks, I guess, that had taken a look at them. But the first time they flew over, they saw women and children. The second time, the women and children were gone, and there were just these guys with bows and arrows. Obviously, I say obviously, but it looked like they'd taken the kids and skedaddled.
You talk about how to try to protect the kid from being attacked by what's in the aircraft?
Well, maybe, who knows?
Yes, obviously, they thought that what was ever in the helicopter was of some level of threat to them, and they were frightened. Now, did anyone say, we are here in peace, we come in peace?
I don't know. But I do know that Bobby Dooley, who has been on our program before, talking about events at the Western States Homeowners Association.
Oh, God.
Margaret, we're going to have her on.
Was she going to talk about her trip to France again for that?
Bobby Dooley gave us a call here just momentarily during the break and wanted to discuss this because she, to put it the way Bobby put it, has been in France and is used to talking to people that don't understand English or the American way of doing things. And Bobby, good of you to be with us.
Nice to be with you, Phil.
Where are you tonight?
Well, we're standing outside the Cafe Marmalade here in Westlake Village. Steve and I just had a quick dinner with Janice Greeley and her husband Dan, and we're heading back.
You guys, it's always interesting to talk with you about your trip to France. Now, you heard us talking about this Stone Age tribe in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Margaret, I'm not trying to say that I am super educated on this topic, but I do know that there are certain ways. I've been successful, okay, at communicating.
Well, you say you've been successful in what way?
I've been successful at communicating with these tribes.
You know, you're talking about the French. It's not a tribe.
I understand that.
You're not a super... you're not one of these ugly Americans, are you?
I should hope not, Phil. I like to think that I represent my country very well. But I do enjoy, as my husband Steve does, traveling. And we are going to assert those things that we would require. And we certainly will, in conjunction with that, identify ourselves as American. Okay? Because as Americans, and holding that most precious of all, travel documents, which is the American passport. Wouldn't you agree with that, Margaret?
I think having an American passport is a wonderful thing, yes. But I don't wave it under the nose of a customs officer and say, you see this? Looky here. Look who I am.
I don't do that. I don't.
Well, you said that you did.
One time when we were landing in Italy, and one of the Italiano... And you know, Phil, about the Italians, they call their police their Calabrianzis, something like that.
No, they're called Calabrari. Can you find out, bud?
What do you want to look at?
What do they call the police in Italy?
They're called Calabration, right?
And you're asking me? I don't know. I don't speak Italian.
Well, no, it doesn't. They're called Polizia. That's what it is.
No, it's not Polizia. It's something else entirely.
Yes, it is different. So what happened?
We were getting off of the aircraft, and one of the customs people said, oh, what's this? What's this? And was waving a pair of I couldn't believe what I was seeing, but he's waving all over the place, a pair of my panties, which I had purchased in France, which were lace and had some of the silk embroidery. And he was saying, ooh-wee. And I said, that's when I pulled out my passport.
Well, those weren't your panties, though, didn't we? Didn't you determine that?
Yes.
They were a woman neck. Yes, it was another woman. But I said they, for all intents and purposes, are my panties because I like them, and I would wear those. And
so what did you do? You took your passport. These are a pair of panties that are not yours.
As I said, Phil, I would wear them. I would buy them.
You're not going to get off this. She's going to stay with that.
That's right. I hold on to it. When I make a point, I hold on to it like a bulldog with a piece of light ham. Okay? So I pulled out my passport. I stuck it under the nose, the big nose, the big Roman nose of this Italiano Calabrizi, and I said...
Well, you don't...
Would you please shut up, Margaret?
Did you just tell me to shut up?
I'm trying to finish a sentence, if you don't mind.
Margaret, please.
I put it under the big, fat Roman nose of this Calabrizzanzi, Zandanda, whatever, and I said, you see this? This is an American passport. Enough said. I took the panties. I stuck them in my suitcase, even though they weren't mine. They were taken from me. They were given back to this woman. I took them back. We had a tug of war.
You're kidding. You, I mean, are you fighting over this underwear? Did you? So what's the upshot of this ridiculous story? Because I want to get on to your trip to France.
Well, the upshot of the ridiculous story, Phil, is that the panties went back to the lady that they belonged to. Steve and I were held for another couple of hours. We were questioned by the chief detective, and then we were let go. So I made my point.
So in other words, you were held there for 2 hours longer than you should have been because you were in a tug of war over another woman's underwear, and you wanted to prove a point about it was a pair of underwear that you would buy, that you would own, and so therefore they could be yours, and here's my American passport under your big fat Roman nose.
Yes. That's exactly right. Do I feel like I wasted our time? No, I don't. I made my point.
They don't care what point you made, Bobby.
Yeah, you called yourself Margaret. Or you called me Margaret.
Yeah, I call myself Margaret.
No, but you called me Margaret.
No, I called myself Margaret.
All right, that's a fight we can have another time. Bobby, you were in France a number of years ago. You want to speak to this idea of discovering a Stone Age tribe. You recognize, of course, as we lead into this conversation, how insulting this might be to people who are from France?
No, Phil, because here's why it was. It's nothing like that. I said to the French people, in much the same way that I think your very good friend here, Margaret Gray, was about to say, I spoke directly, I spoke clearly, I spoke loudly, and I made my feelings known. I'm an American. I'm an American. You do that twice. You do it very clearly. You do it so that syllabically you can be understood.
Right. Well, I get all of that.
I'm not done yet. So you do it syllabically. You do it clearly. That's all I really had to say, but I don't like you jumping in on me, Margaret, if you don't mind.
I'm sorry, you done?
Yes, I'm done.
That's fine. I understand that what you're trying to do is make yourself understood. But you're in France. They are not a Stone Age tribe.
That's what you say. I had a headache, a migraine, thank you, brought on by a very, very difficult time of the month, which I generally have, because I have some very powerful hormones going on.
As do I.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me.
As do I.
I'm not talking. Phil.
Ladies, please, Margaret, would just let her finish.
I'm just saying I do, too.
It's not about you. It's about me right now.
She's going to start to cry.
No, I'm not crying.
Can I just jump in, Mr. Henry?
No, Steve. Please don't.
God.
Steve. So I said I'm an American. I'm having a very difficult time of the month. Time of the month. And I made this point over and over and over again to this this John Dam. And
the gendarme, you mean?
Get a load of you trying to be French.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to get the accent. The gendarme, right?
It's the gendarme, right.
Okay, good for you. It doesn't matter. I told the GD, that's what I call him, a GD. I said, I'm an American. Well, lo and behold, before you could say lickety-split and Martin Luther, there were three Maidol and a cab.
And you got to the hotel and you were better, huh?
Well, no, I wasn't better, but at least I was off the street where a lot of things could have happened had I not gotten some pain relief.
All right, Bobby Dooley with us here, and Margaret Gray and Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard and General Galen Shaw. General, you have a shocked look on your face.
Well, I'm wondering where all this is going. This is about as far out a story as I've ever heard in my... Why, not any army in the field behaving that way. In the time of war, we'd be brought up on charges, running around...
What are you talking about?
If I'm going up to some Frenchie and saying, hey, you French, I'm an American. My God, they'd bring me up on charges. So...
All right, well, we'll get back to this fascinating story of Ms. Bobby Dooley and her husband and all the fine things that they were doing there in France and how that all relates to our topic of, I don't know, Stone Age people. World-famous Phil Henry Show, are we all done talking about Russia? We haven't even gotten into Russia, have we?
No, you're going to talk about the Russia.
Would you please lower it?
We're going to talk about Russia.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about Russia. So we'll get back to that and more of the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com.
Now, what is this you have on Phil TV?
This is an image from BBC One, and this is the helicopter flying over this area. You can see it's an actual video, and look at them flying over this settlement where these people, you see them? They are all standing near their huts. They have bows and arrows. Some of the men are painted head to toe in orange. Others, all of them holding weapons. Some of them running. This is a very thickly forested area. You can see, once again, people standing outside these huts looking up. They seem to be absolutely amazed at this flying thing coming over top of these banana palms. Each one of them holding a bow and an arrow. That's wild, huh?
But they've never seen a helicopter before?
Obviously not. Or if they have seen helicopters, they've only seen them in very, very brief moments. Maybe they just don't see. It's kind of like seeing trains, you know. If you live out in the hinterlands and a train comes by and people run out and wave to the train because they don't see it coming through that much, it may be the same with these folks when it comes to these helicopters. But these are clearly Stone Age people, absolutely fascinated, perhaps afraid of the helicopter. They're hiding. You can see them getting into this kind of crouching position as they see this helicopter flying over, holding their bows and arrows. They're in these thick trees. Now, there's a commentary that goes on, that goes along with this, that I think is the most arrogant of all, and that's the idea that these are people who have somehow had the choice of living with us or living among us and have decided, no, they don't want to do that. They are going to separate from us and they're going to live their own lives off someplace else. And I don't know where they get that, you know.
Well, what do you mean, Phil?
Well, what I mean is this. I mean, these are people who live in this culture, this society, this sort of Stone Age culture, if you want to call it that, or this primitive society. But to say that they sampled the wares of modern civilization and decided, oh, we want no part of it, is an absolutely ridiculous statement. It's a totally ridiculous statement. There's different people in the world, and they're in different cultures. And some people want to, you know, journey out and see what else the world has to offer, and some people want to stay hidden. Who are the people that generally want to stay hidden? They're generally the older people. You know, they're generally the older, more set-in-their-way conservative people. It's generally the younger people that want to go out and see the world. And so the BBC and some of these articles, I just saw this one article where I pulled that quote from. This guy, you know, I just love these cats that want to vilify modern society as something that's evil. Why? Why would you do that?
Well, modern society, with all of its greed and avarice and its pettiness and its warfare, why wouldn't you want to live in the frolicking? I don't know anything about it, Phil. I'm trying to see it from the I'm being the devil and taking the devil's point, the devil's advocate here, right?
Yes, you're being the devil's advocate, and you're saying what?
I'm saying, why wouldn't you want to frolic out and be free? You see?
Why wouldn't I want to frolic and be free? You mean be frolic and be free with tuberculosis?
Now, wait a minute, Phil. They didn't have those diseases.
All right, they didn't have tuberculosis, but they had diseases, and they had injury and death from animals, injury and death from warring tribes. These are not folks that live to be the ripe old age of 75, 80, 85 years of age. A lot of them die very young, and they die oftentimes from injury. These are folks that have a hard life. I'm not saying we got to go busting in there and saying, okay, we got the answer. Here we come with all of our modern vaccines, and we have cars, and we have stoves, and we got all this cool stuff, and, you know.
Well, why wouldn't anybody want to live like that? Got to live, you know, in the weeds and everything.
Because some people want to be able to live free and eat greens.
Well, what do you mean live free and eat greens?
Well, whatever they eat, I don't know. You're the one making the case.
No, I'm talking about, I don't want to live in a society like that. They're sitting down and worshiping an airplane.
Well, they don't know what an airplane's for.
Yeah, they don't know what an airplane's for. That doesn't make them primitive. I'm not saying that not knowing what an airplane is for makes them primitive. That ain't it. I'm not even saying they're primitive. I'm just saying If you say that what we have here and what they have, somehow we're worse, I say give them the honest choice, and you're going to find a fair number of people in that society wanting to live where we live. And yeah, a lot of them wanting to stay where they are. Like any people anywhere, most of the people that are set in their ways and don't want to change are going to be the older people.
So the old timer, so you're saying that what these people are saying is that what you're...
Margaret, why don't you spit it out, okay?
I'm spitting it out.
Wait. I'm sick and tired. She's always fumbling around with it, trying to grab... Why don't you grab it with both hands?
Yeah, you know something? I wish you had something to grab with both hands. Probably just take a little bit of a tweezers.
Well, that's dirty, Poole.
All right.
Now, here is the ultimate answer. Anytime we look to primitive societies as the way to live, you know, wow, man, if only we could go back in time and live simply and primitively and live in the grooviosity of it all, you're making a big mistake, okay? Because for all of the grooviness of it, there's all kinds of hardship, and there's also, as I said, the people themselves. If I were to ask them honestly, would you like to live the way we live, you would find a great many of them saying yes.
Now, wait a minute, because from your own big fat mouth, Phil, yes, I said big fat mouth, you had the experience of that one man, Kukululu, or whatever that guy's name was from Fiji.
Who?
Yeah, now I remember that one guy you met in Fiji, and he got lost at a Rolling Stones concert.
Oh, that cat, yeah. Who was this gentleman? That was a guy we met in Fiji. See, I met Mike Elder. I forget Mike's last name. He was one of the owners of the Cousteau Resort down in Fiji. And I got to know this guy because we were down there. And I had met a number of the people who lived in the town near this beautiful, beautiful resort he had down there. I love this place because it really was a rather simple, wasn't cheap, but it was a place that didn't put it on, you know? And they had a lot of people coming in from the village to have these kava ceremonies. You know this kava that I was telling you about?
Is that the stuff that puts you to sleep?
Yeah, it's like a tranquilizer. It's a root. Anyway, I met this guy. He was an older guy, probably in his 60s or 70s, plays the ukulele, singing his ass off. Looks like a really happy guy. And Mike told me about this guy.
Well, you have to take a break.
All right. So should I tell the story?
Well, yeah, you got to tell the story now for crying out loud.
All right. We'll finish it on the other side. We've got other news to tell. We got to get back into this Russia stuff, I guess, because Bud's going to flip out.
Dad, just want to know the latest on Russia.
What is it with you and Russia, man?
On account of the charge of the Light Brigade.
Get off the charge of the Light Brigade kick, man. There's no charge of the Light Brigade. Thank you very, very much. Okay, back here in a few minutes on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. We are live and we are mobile at philhendryshow.com on Listen Live, live and mobile on TuneIn tonight on your mobile or your desktop. We'll be right back.
Man's name, anyway.
I don't know. It's like a Fiji name.
Oh, really?
World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, and online at TuneIn as well. And welcome back to our program. I'm just fascinated with this stuff.
Well, I can appreciate you being fascinated, but you're doing it at the expense of developed humans.
Well, you're making fun. You're making fun of your own people, Phil.
I'm making fun of my own people? How am I doing that?
You're saying that guy in the helicopter, you wish he would have taken a spear through the head.
Yes. Your audience didn't hear that one, did they?
Okay. You know.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, during the commercial break...
Margaret.
Excuse me. During the commercial break, Mr. Hendry said he hoped that the elderly man in the helicopter flying over the Stone Age village, the elderly man who worked for the BBC, Mr. Hendry hoped the man would take a spear right through his eye.
I didn't say eye.
Well, you said head. What part of the head do you think it'll go through?
Thank you, General.
You're welcome.
Well, I was kidding. I guess that doesn't matter.
Well, it's a heck of a thing to kid about.
But here again, my point is, we're going to get Bobby Dooley back on here, and then we're going to finish this conversation. My point is simply this. That guy was saying, wasn't he saying, they should have a choice, meaning these undeveloped tribes, they should have a choice as to whether they contact us or not?
Yeah, you're right about that, Mr. Henry. He did say that.
Okay. What choice has that old man given him as he's flying his helicopter over top of them, taking all kinds of pictures, you know?
Well, what do you mean, what choice?
That's not a very fair question, Phil.
Yeah, it is. What choice has that old man given him? If he wants them to have a choice as to whether they should have contact with us or not, and he's flying his helicopter over them morning, noon, and night taking his pictures.
Well, he said that was the only way the rest of the world would be convinced that they exist.
Oh, sure. He's got all kinds of very, very nice excuses for what he's doing, right? Why, if the world, what are you talking about?
He said he needed to take those pictures.
Wait a minute. That guy said that those people had been contacted by loggers and miners. And he said that those loggers and miners were going to endanger the lives of those people. All right? So they know that those people exist.
Well, who does?
The world.
Henry, you're chasing your tail. You're all in a heap. Don't you understand what you're saying?
Phil, you're babbling.
No, I'm not babbling. That old man said that they should have a choice as to whether or not they want to have contact with us. All the while, he's taking pictures of them. He's flying over their village. He's scaring them half to death. I could see the people down on the ground. They all look freaked out.
They didn't look freaked out. They had on war paint.
Oh, yeah, that's not freaked out, though. They got all the women and children hiding. They got on their war paint, and they're ready to put a spear through the old man's head. And they probably would give some kind of a prize at the evening council as they had the roasted pig out of the sand that night, saying, "This goes to the man who put the spear through old creep's head."
Very funny.
I would love that.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to give a prize to the guy.
They'd probably have some big roasted pig that night in the lodge, in the community lodge, and, you know, give the roasted pig prize to the guy that put a spear through the old creep from BBC's head.
And you think they know the BBC?
I'm sure they're very familiar with them. Yes. I think the elders of the village are very, very familiar. Oh, God, here they come again. The BBC.
Oh, that's pretty funny, Phil. Pretty funny. However, reality is something else entirely. The reality of it is a very scary, scary deal. And that is...
What?
He didn't remember.
All right, Bobby Dooley back with us here to recount her marvelous trip to Paris, France. So, Bobby, you were in Paris, and you were contacting the Parisians, and not to say that this is like contacting a Stone Age tribe, but...
Yeah, but we did do the same thing. I understand your point, Phil, about, these are people that... should be respected, and that the French people are not a primitive tribe of people, but it seems to be the best way to talk to any people that are not familiar with us as Americans. I don't think we're superior. I am simply saying that we have had enough of an impact on the world as a country that we should be at least acknowledged, and that there should be a protocol, I think, for instance, something as simple, do you have the notes, Steve?
Yeah, I got the notes right here on the protocol.
Steve took some notes the last time we traveled abroad. These are just very, very, I roughed this out before I came on the air, a protocol for the traveling American, that if there is a rush, or if there is a some form of congestion or difficulty with the numbers of people entering a hotel, let's say, that Americans announce themselves, that they very calmly and with a sideways step or a drag step move up through the crowd so that they do arrive at the head of that crowd, nod to the doorman, at which point he then opens, and in a single file the Americans go in.
Oh, I see. So the drag step is a way of what?
The drag step is a way to get through the crowd in a uniform way, taking up as little space as possible.
I see.
Wait. This is asinine.
Why is that asinine?
Americans get to go up in front of the crowd before anybody else?
It is a way of solving the congestion problem, Phil.
You know, a few minutes ago, Margaret, you were having a big argument with Bobby.
Well, there are things she says, and there are things that she relates to that she and I have a commonality about.
Man.
A commonality about.
Yeah, I think this makes a lot of sense, Phil. You want the Americans to get to the front of the crowd so there can be the sight of the Americans that calms the crowd down, and then we move on through the revolving doors in a single-file manner.
That was my thinking, yeah.
And why would the sight of Americans calm a crowd down?
Because when push comes to shove, my friend, even though people may say they don't like Americans, they know that when an American is there, in the crowd or at the head of a crowd, let me tell you what, the big dog on the block is starting to eat. And daddy's home.
I couldn't agree more, General.
Daddy's home, yes.
What do you mean, daddy's home?
Just what I said, daddy's home. So everybody just take a step back. Take two steps back away from the weapon. Drop to your knees and put your hands on your head.
You're under arrest.
No, you're not under...
Phil, why do you make everything into a colossal joke? Nothing more than a big wet fart.
I've noticed that when I come on your program, Phil.
Okay, well, I'll try and clean my act up a little bit.
Just a big, wet, loose fart.
I can't disagree with that.
Thank you for the image. I appreciate it.
You know what? And we're sitting down to have chocolate ice cream for dessert, and yet I appreciate that image, Margaret, and I don't blame you for it. I blame Phil.
Thank you very much, Bobby. I'm Margaret Gray.
Oh, we don't get to say anything?
Phil!
I'm sorry, Margaret. I can't just lock out right now.
Well, I said I'm Margaret Gray just to shut her up.
Who, Bobby?
Yes.
And I thought you were pals. Well.
Well, pals to a degree.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Dooley. No, bud.
Stop calling right back. He's all pissed off now.
About what?
About Margaret saying to shut her up.
Let me talk to her. Bobby. No, hold on. No, you're not on the air. I said I'm Margaret. I didn't say to shut you up. I meant Steve. Yes. No, I meant Steve because he's always butting in. I said her because, really, you wear the pants. I said her because you... Yes. All right, dear. Bye-bye. You're wonderful. I just... What a slut.
Man, she's going to hear that, too.
Yeah, called right back.
Give me the phone, Bobby. She's joking around. She's joking around. Margaret is. Oh, you called to talk to me? Yeah, you can get a tape. What did Margaret say? Nothing. I was just following up on what she said to you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll put you back with Bud.
Yeah, Bobby.
Will you go into the other room or something? All right, it's the Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Thank you so very, very deeply, Mr. and Mrs. Dooley. It's always a thrill and a half, always a treat, always just an ass-kicking time having y'all on the show. We'll be back with more from the crazy-ass world that we live in right after these messages. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, you better get it done.
I know I better get it done. Yeah, we have, tax time is generally it was a time for the last 15 years. I didn't think much about it because I had an accountant who we just, well, let's just say we had a parting of the ways last December, and I did that. It was my decision.
Well, why'd you do that, Phil?
Oh, his ego.
No, let me tell you something. It wasn't my ego, okay? No, it wasn't my ego. I just believe that if you're paying for a service, that you should not be made to feel as if you're the one doing the guy the favor. You see, when the money is going out of your pocket into that person's pocket, they're not doing you a favor. You're doing them the favor. You're hiring them. And when they begin to make it like, oh, wow, what a hassle, if it's like a big thing... Goodbye. That's all there is to it. I don't give a crap. I'll get an extension. What do I care?
Well, you're going to have to pay up on quite a few things.
Yeah, we're going to have to, I got to have to clean up the mess left by this guy. I'll just tell you this much, of all the people in the world that I don't want to have to do some big song and a dance with, one of them is accountants. I think CPAs are valuable, wonderful people. Okay, and I think to a point, they're there to remind you how much money you have, how much you should be spending. I get it. But if you don't have, in the case of certain people, if you don't have a working understanding of what I do for a living, I'm not going to tell him how to do his business, how to run his business. If you don't know what it is that I do for a living, get off my back about the money that we're spending, number one, okay? Because you're not going to get your way. And number two, don't ever, ever make the statement that this guy did, which was, well, you know, I don't need the business.
Oh, my God, he didn't say that.
You better believe he said it. So we fired him. And I don't care. You know, if it takes us a whole year to get our house in order, that's what it takes. But you know what? It was about time, because this guy, I'd had this guy since I was married. And I didn't know him before we got married. So I, you know, I just, all I want is a guy that is going to keep me out of jail, make sure that we are keeping what we should keep, give Caesar unto Caesar, and God to God, and blue, ba-boom, ba-bing, ba-bing, bing, bang, boom, you know.
That sounds almost like the mafia when they go bing, bing, bang and everything.
The mafia? You're quoting the Bible, for God's sake. Yeah, that's what I was doing. I was quoting the mafia and the Bible. Okay? All right, the Phil Henry Show here, and let's see, what's going on? Well, Russia's just about ready to go and invade, I guess. So what the hell's the latest here, man?
Well, like Russia got troop moving into Crimea.
That's what we were talking about last week.
Forget about Crimea, will you, bud? Forget that we ever brought up Crimea. Crimea River, will you, bud? Huh?
Crimea River.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. So this is the whole thing with these cats, man. I don't know. But the whole deal with Russia is that they do what they do and we do what we do. The world is run by these countries. And I hear it often said that the world is run by corporations. Well, that's a very interesting question. But if the world is run by corporations, how is it that the commodities, prices, the overall business that the world transacts is suddenly put on hold or sent spiraling in one direction or the other, not by the statements necessarily of people that run companies, but by world leaders? Russia's move into Crimea, following its unsuccessful efforts to prop up the repressive government of recently deposed President Viktor Yanukovych, is obviously an extremely troubling development. And what it did was it sent Russian commodities, those things traded internationally, those things that have Russia's trademark of Russia, produced in Russia, Russia's commodities of whatever, it sent them just hitting the floor. I mean, the price went right to the floor on these things.
Well, Phil, you're sounding all... what are you talking about?
Do you really know what you're speaking of here, Phil? Because you're getting in way over your head here. I'm not trying to come off like I'm the Motley Fool.
Yeah, the Motley Fool. And them guys, they know all about the stock market.
I'm just telling you what I... Yeah, isn't that nice? We'll get them on.
Well, who's the Motley Fool? They're pretty good.
Forget about the Motley Fool right now. All I'm saying is what I'm reading here, you know? Russia does this, their military movements in Crimea, and the next thing you know, we got a problem with the international markets when it comes to Russian goods. So what is this stuff about one big happy corporation, man? That's a political movement, and it's a political move and a military move. So what's the latest, bud?
Yeah, they invaded this Crimea.
When did they do that?
What do you mean, when did they do that? I thought they did that last week.
No, I thought they hadn't yet done it last week. Ukraine praised for refusing to rise to Russian provocation. Russia, ousted Ukrainian president, requested the military help. When did they move into... this shows you what I know. Russian fleet issues ultimatum, surrender or face a storm. The United States says Russia's reported threats to the Ukrainian Navy may be... dangerous escalation, the Associated Press said. Moscow would be responsible a day after Ukraine's interim prime minister called Russia's military intervention a declaration of rule of war. I guess they moved in yesterday, I don't know. But prime Russian trading partner Germany appears crucial to ending this crisis. See, there's a lot of things having to do with the international political scene. but nonetheless, excuse my throat, folks, but for some reason I've got... a problem with it here. The new pro-Russian regional government in Crimea, which came to power in a coup last week, has scheduled a referendum on independence for March 30th,
but see update on the meaning of the referendum below. Quite possibly, Putin intends to use the referendum as a justification for either annexing Crimea or creating a Russian puppet state there, similar to those Russia previously carved out of Georgia and Moldova. If the vote does not go his way, Putin and his allies will not hesitate to rig the results, as he has in elections in Russia itself. Wow.
I thought they had a democracy in Russia. This is outrageous. How dare they? They were talking about the Russian democracy and all of these things.
Margaret, why don't you get a clue? The Russians, you can't change the stripes on a tiger. These guys are dirty right down to their underwear.
Yeah, pink right down to the pink underwear.
Man, you said that last week.
You did, bud. Yeah, this is the usual ball game they play over there. But, you know, it's no different from what the United States, the game that we would play, that we should play, when it comes to our own hemisphere and to our own geopolitical interests. Now, let's take the Pacific, for instance. As long as you want to talk about stuff, you got China making noises over in the Pacific, and there's no question that China believes that Japan, Taiwan, you know, the China Sea, all that stuff, that's all Chinese.
Well, and why wouldn't it be?
Okay, fine. If that's the case, then the Philippines and the South Pacific and Tahiti and Micronesia and Polynesia and all that stuff, that all belongs to the United States, because we've got bases throughout that area. We have military bases. You know, it's a really dangerous world. These are countries that don't, you know, they're not they're not necessarily as vulnerable to public opinion.
Well, the Russians, if they're going to pull their dictatorship, see, they were communists.
Yeah.
And now are they still communists? I don't get it.
I don't know. It's a totalitarian way of doing things.
Well, look, let me explain something to you so that you people understand what's going on.
Now, Daryl, you don't want to figure it out.
Don't talk to me like I'm a nincompoop. I get the bigger picture.
Margaret, the only big picture you get is whether or not the lights are bright enough in the can so you can put your lipstick on.
I will not be mocked.
Come on, Margaret, sit down and just listen to what he's saying.
I'm telling you right now, the Russians have been they've been doing things this way for centuries. They're a bunch of peasants over there. And if they don't have a czar running things, they don't know whether to crap or fall in it. Now, that's the only thing they understand, and that's the way that we ought to, deal with them.
Well, so what does that mean?
Yeah, let's just put a gun up their butt?
Yeah, put a gun up their butt, that's one way of saying it. We have to have a show of force with the United States Navy, and that means in the Pacific as well as in the Atlantic. As well, I don't know where in the Atlantic. What about the Caspian Sea? Can we get in there?
I don't know. What kind of? Let me ask you something. What kind of naval presence are we going to have in the Atlantic that's going to threaten Russia?
Well, what about in the north, up near the North Pole, where the reindeer? I don't know.
Yeah, back to the reindeer.
Talk about the reindeer, man.
You mean the Arctic Sea?
Yes, the Arctic Sea.
Yeah, you know, we put submarines there. The U.S. Navy has, I don't know how many subs, but the real arm of the U.S. Navy is the nuclear submarine, and that goes anywhere it wants to. The problem is, or not the problem, but the reality is, the Russians have the same thing. So we have all of these subs all over the place, and we're constantly following each other and chasing each other and chasing each other out of each other's territorial waters. God knows if Obama or the Joint Chiefs of the military told us how many times we had to chase a Russian sub out of American waters, the American people would probably crap themselves.
Oh, you think what, like every day?
Who knows? All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com to continue more of this folderol. And so good of you to be with us tonight. Listen to us online at TuneIn and philhendryshow.com. Listen live. We'll be right back. Open a window, right? Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So I think Seth MacFarlane is very gracious.
Yes, Seth MacFarlane has said that essentially, congratulations to Ellen DeGeneres, that she obviously wiped the floor with him.
She didn't say that, for God's sake.
Well, he didn't say that. But in so many words, he's saying, listen, Ellen DeGeneres got a thumbs up for her Oscar hosting duties Sunday from someone who knows the job's advancement. Blah, 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 blah. I thought Ellen was great. I thought she was great. See?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like he's saying she wiped the floor with him.
What is this? Adam Carolla is hammering justice home, catch a contractor on Spike TV. What is that?
Are you talking about Seth MacFarlane?
Yeah, talk about Adam Carolla.
Adam Carolla's got a TV show.
I understand that. Adam's got a show on Spike. It's probably Catch a Contractor. It's probably some show where he takes some contractor and some of these contractors, maybe they're charging too much. I don't know. We're talking about MacFarlane.
Yes. Listen, I thought Ellen was great. I thought she was great the last time in 2007, too, said MacFarlane. But I didn't say anything then because no one else was really kissing her ass, and I knew that I was going to have my shot. So I pretended like I really didn't care how good she did and, in fact, wanted the impression to be that I thought she blew on ice. However, this time...
Let me see that.
Phil, I'm taking some editorial liberty.
Oh, well, gee. He didn't say any of that.
Let me see.
Don't grab copy out of my hand, please, General.
I'm sorry, but I happen to out... Give me that. Tell me what to do. Let's see. Seth MacFarlane. Is this that fairy there?
Fairy? Yes, that's Seth MacFarlane.
Will you look at that weak chin? Seth MacFarlane, blah, 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 gobbledygook, gobbledygook. Ah, here we are. Seth MacFarlane said that if I had to do it over again, I would have put up a better effort than I did last year to be made to look like a chimpanzee's uncle because Ellen DeGeneres and the whole thing with the pizza, that really chaps my hide, said MacFarlane as he left for an evening at the theater.
Hmm. I wonder if he was there.
Wait a minute. Did he really say that? Let me see.
Quit grabbing copy on a pizza. You think he was there?
I doubt it. The Family Guy creator, who's producing a new TV series, Cosmos, a space-time odyssey, and directing an upcoming film, A Million Ways to Die in the West, said he's been busy traveling and only caught the first half of the show, but liked what he saw. Cosmos is a bold foray into science programming that premieres Sunday at 9 p.m. On 10 U.S. networks, including Fox, National Geographic, blah, 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 blah. When asked about people comparing DeGeneres' approach to his edgier, more controversial, and yes, less funny 2013 performance, MacFarlane said, I've got to go now. Thank you very much. No, he said, everyone who hosts that show has their fans and their detractors. I think it's all pretty par for the course.
Well, that's a good point.
What does that mean?
I think he's absolutely right. I think, but I do think you can look back and say who were the winners and who... in other words, you can look back and say the ones that you really enjoyed, and you can say the ones that didn't do so good. And I think that, for instance, Billy Crystal, I think uniformly is considered really great.
I don't think Billy Crystal's all that great.
I'm talking about people who have a normal view of life, not you two freaks, okay?
God, man, it's hardcore. What are you talking about?
I mean that Billy Crystal, for the most part, everybody liked him. Everybody liked Bob Hope. Everybody liked Johnny Carson. You know what I'm talking about, okay?
Johnny Carson, did he host the Olympics?
What do you mean the Olympics? You mean the Oscars?
Yeah, you call the Olympics.
Maybe I did. You mean the Oscars?
Yeah.
Yeah, Johnny Carson hosted the Oscars.
Oh, Johnny Carson, Johnny Carson was state of the art. There was no one better than, well, Bob Hope was good, but Johnny Carson, he was the gold standard by which all others should be measured, and not a one of them could, they'd have to get on a stepladder to kiss his you-know-what. And that's from me to you, friend.
Well, I don't know if he was, yeah, he was good, you know, but...
What do you mean, oh, yeah, he was good?
Johnny Carson, Phil. Who was better than Johnny Carson?
I don't think anybody. I think Billy Crystal, I think people would say, probably came up to that. Now, I have my own, you know, I like Steve Martin.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Well... There's a lot of people that agree with me. And I want to say Ricky Gervais, but he never hosted the Academy Awards, did he?
No, he hosted the Olympics.
Will you knock it off with the Olympics? Okay, I know I screwed up. He hosted the...
Who's it, Gore Vidal?
No, Ricky Gervais.
I don't know who the hell that is.
He hosted the Golden Globe.
Golden Globes, there you go. I think that Steve Martin was good. I don't think the Steve Martin-Alec Baldwin collaboration was all that good. Although it was a good try. I mean, it didn't look to me like Steve Martin was enjoying it.
That was the problem with that. Steve Martin didn't need Alec Baldwin. I thought they were both very funny, but Steve Martin didn't need Alec Baldwin, you see.
Margaret, what are you going to do that for?
What? Need.
I know, your face gets all weird looking.
Hey, the only face around here that's weird looking, my man.
Well, you point a finger at yourself, you're pointing a finger back.
I'm pointing one finger at myself and one finger back. That's if I was you, with only two fingers.
He's got all five fingers.
But he should only have two, the way he sounds. Most of the people who are listening to him right now would believe he only has two fingers.
Yeah, but I got all five.
All five for both hands.
No, I got five on each hand.
Yeah, we know, bud. Thank you. So, I can't remember who... Oh, what about Whoopi Goldberg?
Whoopi Goldberg stinks. Everything Whoopi Goldberg does, outside of acting, stinks. There, does that answer your question?
I think Whoopi was wonderful myself.
No, Whoopi Goldberg blew... Oh, God. The blue...
Yeah, she blowed. Whoopi Goldberg, when did she do it?
Whoopi Goldberg hosted the Academy Awards about, I don't know, three or four times, maybe.
I thought she was delightful.
Well, I got to agree. I didn't think she stunk that bad. I didn't think she was that funny. But that's, you know. And then who else?
Then another one was Ray Fine.
Ray Fine?
You mean who?
The guy that was the general in Schindler's List.
He didn't host the Olympics. Are you high on drugs? Oh, I know. James Franco and what's-her-ass.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, that was a disaster. That was a... Anne Hathaway, that was it. Thank you very much, Nikki. Nikki just said Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, with James Franco.
With who?
James Franco.
Well, no, she said Anne Hathaway.
They hosted it together.
Well, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Well, she was great.
She was great, but he was what?
I can't remember him. He must have sucked on wheels.
And then there was, does anybody remember the Academy Awards that Rob Lowe danced with Snow White?
What? You gotta be kidding. You're nuts or something.
I do remember that, yes. That was a nightmare beyond all belief. A nightmare beyond all comprehension. And it was an Academy Awards, and I'll tell you who. It was produced by Henri Jutecoteau-Luc. I forget his name, but he had a French name. And he was the one that was the producer of The Village People.
Oh, Jesus.
That's right. And he produced that one.
Yeah, it was Rob Lowe who danced with Snow White, but I don't remember the rest of the show.
Yeah, I think they had like a bunch of different people.
Yeah, those ones where they have a bunch of different people is kind of whacked out. Like, I'll tell you the one that I thought was goofy, and yet I thought it was okay. You remember the one where Peter Coyote was off stage announcing? Was it?
No, Peter Coyote was the announcer, but they put him on camera.
Wasn't he also the host?
No, they had another host, but Peter Coyote they put on camera because he's some hippie that gave them the hippie, you know, they got a lot of hippie, I don't know, but... I could do without that guy and all of the hippie, all of his friends, but apparently that was his, he probably muscled his way in there and threatened them.
Yeah, that's what he did. He threatened them if he didn't get to be the announcer. I bet you Peter Coyote, that's what he's always wanted to do.
Peter Coyote is a marvelous actor. He's got a wonderful voice.
He's got a great voice. He's one of the top narration guys around. He's got a phenomenal voice. In fact, every time, he's one of those voices you recognize. Peter Coyote is one of them. Stacy Keach is a terrific, has got a great narration voice. Have you heard him?
What's he on?
He does the American Greed.
Oh, I have heard that. He's very good.
Now, what is the guy?
Stacy Keach. He was in that movie Nebraska, in fact. He was one of the old-timers in Nebraska. He's got a great set of pipes. There's a few of these cats, you know.
Well, in any event, did Stacy Keach host the Academy Awards?
Yeah, I think he did. Stacy Keach did.
No, he didn't.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure. These two idiots are saying that he did because that's the way they think. Every time I bring up a name, he must have hosted the Academy Awards. I bet you if I said Mr. Magoo, you'd think he hosted the Academy Awards.
Well, that he was a cartoon man.
He's a cartoon man can't do it.
Yeah, that's right. He was a cartoon man. Okay, folks.
Well, are you saying that he did?
I am. Mr. Magoo did.
I think I remember the one year.
Yeah, see? No, he didn't. I was kidding.
Well, you're confusing them, Phil.
Well, which is it?
He did.
Well, did he or didn't he?
If I said he did, you guys are pretty sure he did, right?
I think he did, yeah.
Well, no, he didn't.
Yeah, well, you're just saying that, so we look like a horse's ass.
No, I'm saying it because it's true. Mr. Magoo was a cartoon. How's he going to host the Academy Awards?
Because they've had cartoons do it before.
No, they have not had a cartoon do it before. You guys had to be.
You're saying, Mr. Henry, that they did not have the guy host it.
How do you have a cartoon? No, they did not. And it proves my point that when you guys hear me mention any name, no matter how stupid, you'll say, oh, yeah, he hosted the Academy Awards, too. Peter Coyote, Mr. Magoo, it doesn't matter. You guys will believe it. I bet you I could say Dick Cheney, you know?
Well, I mean, if he did, it'd probably be only one time.
No, he did not.
Okay, then he didn't.
You idiots. I wish that... You know what? I wish I had about 100,000 more of you two clowns. I'd invade Crimea. You know what I'm saying?
No.
All right, let's just take a commercial break because this is getting real sad. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Why do you say sad? Because of me?
No, not because of you. Just because. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Back with our final segment here on this marvelous Monday night. God, am I glad we're getting through this night. And we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. We didn't even have time to get any music together. Because why? Because I don't know why. Because we just didn't. Anyway... Wait a minute, let me cancel something out here. Hi, guys, welcome back to the program. We had...
That was a real... You know what you were doing? You were fooling around there with the video.
No, I was talking to Nikki about this jackball.
Well, why don't you get off that BBC guy once and for all, okay? Get off the guy's back. He's some old creep trying to earn a living.
I was just showing her the video.
Yeah, get off that kick already, man. I seen the video.
Yeah, okay, bud. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sorry, folks. All right, getting back to the big news of the day, the huge, huge story of the day, the one that just can't possibly be topped. Samsung Electronics struck social media gold when Oscars host Ellen DeGeneres used one of its smartphones to take what has now become the world's most famous selfie. DeGeneres never mentioned Samsung, a major Academy Award sponsor, but handed actor Bradley Cooper the company's Galaxy Note 3 for the celebrity-filled shot that included Meryl Streep, Jennifer Lawrence, Kevin Spacey, Jared Leto, and others. The Oscars selfie was such a viral hit that it crushed the previous record set by President Obama after his re-election in 2012 and temporarily knocked Twitter's service offline as fans retweeted it more than 700,000 times the first half hour alone. In fact, on Facebook, I have myself in that selfie.
Well, you put yourself in it.
Did I really?
Yeah, of course he did.
Well, I want people to know that.
No, everybody's going to... I'm glad you did that, Margaret. Otherwise, everyone was going to think I was at the Academy Awards, and there I was in the front row with Bradley Cooper.
What, were you his date?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you know something? At least I tried, damn it.
Yeah.
So, Margaret, I think it reached something like 300,000 people just that alone. That picture, people love it. The selfie holds the record as the most popular tweet ever, making the picture worth every dollar Samsung paid for the sponsorship, said Peter Seeley, chief executive of the Salcedo Group Strategic Marketing Company. That was a social media home run. It really was. We crashed and broke Twitter, DeGeneres said from the stage. We made history. Samsung said Monday that the selfie was not scripted and that it would donate $3 million total to two charities picked by DeGeneres to thank her. It also began running an ad on Twitter. Record-breaking selfie taken on the next big thing noted. The South Korean electronics maker used the Oscars to introduce its One Samsung campaign that promoted a variety of products, including the Galaxy Note Pro tablet, the Galaxy S5 phone, the Gear 2 smartwatch, and a curved ultra-high definition television. Wow! Samsung did not disclose how much it paid to be a sponsor, but according to research firm Kantar Media, the company spent $24 million from 2009 to 2013 to be one of the top advertisers on the show during those years.
Now, this is a company that had sued Apple.
Well, they have a lawsuit going back and forth with Apple. Apple's got a lawsuit with them. And I don't know. I think Apple won some of the trademark infringement stuff. I think Samsung won some stuff. It was such a long, drawn-out lawsuit. It must have cost an enormous amount of money. And Samsung, because it's a Korean company, and meaning it's a company that is located in another country, made the argument that they were not violating any patents or at least any protected copyrights or trademarks because they were not. It was not an incursion into the U.S. market or the international market. That's not true. Obviously, they're doing international business. So what the upshot of all of that is going to be, I don't know. However, it doesn't look like it's slowing them down here, man, because there they are with their smartphone, there they are with their tablet.
Yeah, but everybody's copying Apple.
Everybody's copying Apple. But let me tell you something, Apple's learning slowly but surely. It does not matter. If you've got a big enough idea, a great enough idea, a fantastic enough idea, and you're making all kinds of money with that idea, sooner or later, man, you're going to have to make good. You're going to have to start sharing the goods. You got to start sharing it around. The world's too small, you know?
Well, Phil, don't trademarks mean something?
They mean something, yes, but trademarks are limited. Trademarks have a limit to them. Copyrights do. There's a life, for instance, to the protection that one is afforded with a patent. And so forth. And I got to tell you, you know, Samsung saw the market that Apple had cornered, and they wanted in. And they wanted into that smartphone market. They didn't give a damn how much it was going to cost them. They have engaged in litigation that's got to be in the hundreds of millions, I would think. Well, maybe not hundreds of millions, but...
Well, why not?
I don't know. But... You know, with all of that money to be made, it no longer is a matter of we had the idea for this technology, for this, we have the idea for this unit, for this software, for this hardware. This is ours. We own it. And we will now go out and make lots and lots of money on it. And you are going to have to come up with your own idea. That isn't necessarily the case when it comes to an enormous amount of money. People are going to find a way in. You know.
Yeah, well, how do you know they even violated no patent and everything?
I don't know, man. I have no idea. Samsung's claiming no, they didn't. Samsung is claiming that they did not. That a lot of this, but Apple is saying, well, it's based on this and it's based on that. It's like those patent trolls when it comes to podcasting, which Mark Maron and a number of other people have been very vocal in putting their foot down on. It's one thing to say that I own this copyright. It's another thing to say I own the patent on the equipment that allowed you to create that thing that you have a copyright on. Or I have the patent on a piece of the equipment that goes into the larger equipment that was the thing that you recorded your material on that you have the copyright on. See what I'm saying? So what's happening here is I may have a radio show or a piece of a radio show or a piece of performance that is a podcast that is on a device that there is a patent to a part of the equipment for, which is owned by some guy that he's had since like 1951. And all of a sudden, this dude, along with a bunch of other patent holders, have gotten together, got an attorney, and they're putting all of their little patents together and saying, we own that technology.
Why isn't that legal?
Because it's chicken crap, man. It's like saying, because I drilled oil in Arabia and that oil that was turned into gasoline, I own, and that gasoline you put into your car, therefore you can't drive your car. That's nuts. It's nuts. You know, what the hell? Why did you create the equipment in the first place? You know, to get forevermore a royalty fee on the equipment or to sell it? Fair market, or otherwise market it, and you know, have other people exploit it. That's kind of what an invention is all about. But to say I drilled oil in the Middle East, and now the oil coming out of that ground forevermore, I will have the rights to. And anybody driving an automobile who doesn't pay me a royalty on top of the money that he pays for the gasoline that is made from that oil to put into his car, he doesn't get to drive his car. You got to be high on a mixture of narcotics, man. You know?
Well, don't look at me when you say that, Phil. I'm just asking these questions. You see how quiet everyone's been?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have.
You're educating me, Phil, on something I know nothing about, which I found very interesting.
I knew I'd better not talk.
Good, bud. You kept your mouth shut. All right. So we're ending this show on a very high note, if you'll pardon the expression. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks so much. And don't forget, we'll be online with our show log right after this here show.